Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Connecticut Energy and Environmental Protection Commissioner Katie Dykes, Laura Francis, the first selectman of Durham, and Matt Knickerbocker, the first selectman of Bethel. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we are talking trash this morning. Connecticut is facing what many have called a waste crisis in the coming years, and we will start with the commissioner to explain what's going on. Commissioner Dykes, how much of this has to do with the impending closure of the trash burning plant in Hartford?
Well, that's one piece of it, Aaron. Thanks so much for having us on. And it's really important to have these opportunities to talk with folks about what's happening. You know, when you wheel your trash bin out to the curb every week, you just might not be thinking much or be aware of where that trash is going and, importantly, how much it's costing now municipalities to manage trash disposal. But the unfortunate news is that some of the traditional solutions that we've relied on for the last few decades to manage our trash disposal are becoming more and more expensive or unavailable. So the Mira facility is one example, an important example of that trend, but it's not limited just to the Mira facility. For folks who may be unaware, the Mira facility, this is the one of the largest waste-to-energy facilities. It's located in Hartford, and it's getting older. It was built several decades ago. It manages historically about a third of the waste that's thrown away in our state. But the facility has, aged and become much more costly to operate. It's in need of very expensive upgrades. I think from the Lamont administration's standpoint, we're just, we didn't have the dollars really available to make those very large investments. And so it's possible we're going to see that facility shut down in the coming years. That means that more municipalities, are resorting to sending waste out of state to landfills out of state. We've already seen that increase from about 30,000, a significant increase in the percentage of towns that are sending waste out of state already. Both of these options are, can be expensive. And unfortunately, landfilling out of state, it's not preferable and it's not going to be sustainable either from an environmental or an economic standpoint, because many of the landfills in the Northeast that are accepting Connecticut's waste today, about 40% of that landfill capacity is likely to close by 2026. So we've got a lot of work to do, a major crisis on our hands if we don't take proactive action to scale up new solutions to manage our waste.
Now, the Mira facility is one of the factors, but there are others as well. For example, China is not taking as much of our recyclables as they once did, correct?
That's true. We have seen a lot of changes, wild swings in the commodity prices for recyclable materials. In the past, when China was a market for those recyclables, towns were getting paid actually for the recyclable material that the residents were diverting. Now that has flipped, as we work hard to grow markets for those materials here in the States, the management of the recycling stream is coming at a greater cost. But there's some good news on the horizon. I think that's the most important thing that we want to share here today, is that there are real solutions that are available to us, including solutions that are more sustainable for our environment, and then in the long term, we think can be more affordable for municipalities and for the citizens of the state. And I'm really excited about the work that DEEP has been partnering with many municipalities around the state on over these last couple of months to identify the solutions and to work to implement them. It's kind of remarkable, Aaron, when you look inside the trash can, right? And you really kind of take a look at what are we throwing away. It's surprising. About 30% of what the average resident throws away each year is organic material. So that includes yard waste, leaves and other material. It includes food scraps. About 20% of your trash that you're disposing is food waste. It's heavy, it's wet, and it could be composted or processed in an anaerobic digester in a much more sustainable way. So that's right there, 30% of our waste stream that could be better diverted if we have the right kind of organics programs in place across the state. Another 40% of what we throw away are materials that are recyclable, paper, plastic, metal. And so increasing and enhancing our recycling programs is another really common sense measure that we can take, again, to minimize the amount of waste that needs to go to a waste energy facility or to a landfill. That's our goal, minimize disposal as much as possible.
Hence the formation of the Connecticut Coalition for Sustainable Materials Management. Laura Francis and Matt Knickerbocker are our co-chairs. Either one of you discuss the challenges related to making sure that the trash gets picked up at a municipal level.
Well, in the town of Durham, we don't have municipal trash pickup. We have a transfer station. We here in Durham, and we share that transfer station with Middlefield, we're also looking at a crisis, a local crisis, because our transfer station is very limited in size, and the tipping fees are going up because of outside, focuses. And our recycling markets have virtually been eliminated. So we have a local crisis that we are so happy that we can partner now with DEEP to help address.
Yeah, we're in the same boat, Aaron. Bethel does not have a municipal pickup. All of our residents who have to have their trash and recycling picked up have to do that by private subscription. But we do also, like Laura, like the town of Durham, we have a municipal transfer station. We don't accept commercial loads, however. It's only for what the industry calls mom and pop drop-offs. But again, as has been explained, what used to be a profit center to some degree many years ago, which is recycling materials, has become an enormously costly thing to get rid of. So we're paying to get rid of the municipal waste, and now we're paying to get rid of the recycling. And there's more of it, especially since people have been working from home in generating more material. And we've reached a tipping point where there has to be more of a global solution. And that's what we're working on today.
Since your panel released its recommendations, what has been the issue that has received the most attention, the most questions among members of the panel?
From the municipal side, that our municipal leaders are a little surprised and pleased to see that there are some very short-term solutions that we can embark upon that will make a difference. You know, we as chief elected officials of small and large and mid-sized towns in Connecticut have such a diverse set of responsibilities that sometimes we're not experts in all the areas where we need to be. And so the engagement with our municipal officials has resulted in their realizing that there are some things that we could take in an interim way to start reducing the municipal solid waste stream.
What are some of those approaches? I'm thinking in particular, there's the idea of pay as you throw, metered trash disposal, as people do with utilities.
That's right. So unit-based pricing, or pay-as-you-throw, is a policy that's been adopted by many municipalities around the country, small towns, large cities. The city of Worcester, for example, presented to our group really compelling. Every jurisdiction that's adopted this new way of paying for trash disposal, where essentially you give the residents themselves, the ownership and responsibility of paying per volume by how much they trash they generate, as opposed to just having a uniform rate where people aren't incented to reduce their waste, right? In jurisdictions that have adopted unit-based pricing, it is remarkable. They have seen a 40% reduction in the amount of trash that's thrown away overnight, like immediate reductions, and they it stays that way. Those reductions are permanent. People recycle more. Where you have best practices to roll out an organics or a food scraps collection program alongside unit-based pricing, so people get better at diverting their food scraps to those programs, and they consume more. They're more attentive to what they're throwing away and the volume of what they're throwing away. And so, you know, when you think about some of the trade-offs, increased landfilling or, hundreds of millions of dollars that taxpayers would have to pay to refurbish waste energy facilities, you know, programs like unit-based pricing, which can achieve such a dramatic reduction in disposal, they have to be part of the conversation. But it has to be a conversation because we know that this is, an impactful policy. But it is something that needs, support and engagement from the individual residents that would be part of making this program successful. And so we're looking forward, in 2021, working with towns. We heard from many of the members of our coalition, municipal leaders who were interested in either working together in regional groups to explore and implement unit-based pricing programs and engaging, in conversations around a statewide mandate for unit-based pricing as a way to, advance these conversations. So that's one that we're looking at. But there are also a number of other approaches that we've been exploring in this coalition. The good news is that there are a lot of different policies you can implement, and each one contributes to helping to reduce the overall, amount of disposal. Includes something called extended producer responsibility. A lot of folks may not have heard of that one, but Matt has become the expert as he led the working group on that one. And I think that's a great one for your listeners to learn about.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Energy and Environmental Protection Commissioner Katie Dykes, joined by Durham First Selectman Laura Francis and Bethel First Selectman Matt Knickerbocker. They are part of the Connecticut Coalition for Sustainable Materials Management. Matt, with the extended producer responsibility program, this is already in place when it comes to things like paint and mattresses, right?
That is correct. And I'd like to share one brief story that I shared with my colleagues when we started this process. Many years ago, before I entered public service, I was on a business trip in Europe, and I watched a consumer in a electronics store buy a TV. And the staff of the store carried the TV out to the gentleman's car, and then they took it out of the box and put it in the back seat and took all the packaging material back in. And that, I think, is a great illustration of what extended producer responsibility is. It's a system by which the producers of the product are responsible for, at various points along the way, the end of life of the product, the packaging, recovery of the product and the packaging, so it can be reused or recycled or disposed of properly. And that's what we've been spending our time on, is coming up with the most effective recommendations for our state legislature with regard to EPR programs, because they do require some support from lawmakers in order to make them work. But you're right, we have in Connecticut a paint care program, which has been enormously successful. Consumers can bring used paint, partially used paint cans back to their retailer or back to any transfer station that participates. The mattress program has been tremendously successful. I see far fewer mattresses on the sides of the roads these days than I did a few years ago. And the electronics recycling program, also saving taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in the state by effectively recovering these products. So what we want to do is expand this. The United States is, we do have EPR programs in place, but frankly, the rest of the world is ahead of us on that. And it is an extremely effective way to cut down on that waste and pollution.
Another proposal that has been recommended is expanding Connecticut's bottle and can redemption law. And this is something that's been on the books for decades, but really hasn't been updated in a while.
That's correct, Aaron. And that is one of the recommendations that came out of our increased recycling working group. But basically, all the working groups looked to the bottle bill modernization as a way to not only take some materials that are very costly for municipalities to handle out of the waste stream, but to also create better end products so that we can look to strengthen, as the commissioner said, finding some markets for the recycled material so that it can become that profit center again as it was once.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. If you look in Beacon Falls, we just had a new manufacturer, Urban Mining, locate there. They're going to be taking glass materials from the recycling stream and utilizing that to create new construction materials. So, you know, your old bottle could become part of a bridge going forward. Building those, strengthening our recycling programs can mean growing manufacturing, growing jobs. Right here in Connecticut, this story from Beacon Falls, you know, really illustrates that. And so it's a great example of how our commitment to environmental state sustainability can provide for lower costs and economic development here in our state.
Commissioner, it seems like there are a lot of solutions out there, but they have to be scaled up in order to be really effective. What has to happen for that to happen?
Well, the first is, you know, working together. And so this Connecticut Coalition for Sustainable Materials Management really reflects, you know, we were sitting here at DEEP having some conversations about how are we going to solve this crisis. And I look out and I see, you know, municipal leaders who are have such an important role to play in helping us scale these programs. So we developed a menu of options it's up on our website, released in December. It's available for, you know, every town, every sustainability task force, every municipal official to sit down and take a look at this. It includes all of the insights, all the recommendations, the best practices that we learned from experts, from other, you know, towns that presented throughout the process that we ran this fall. We've got obviously a number of legislative items that if we see bills introduced, that could advance them. I think those will gather, you know, support from many of the members of this initiative. But we're really looking to be a partner with municipalities to help support them in terms of any individual actions they might take or actions they might take as a region. One example of that, just speaking about organics, I mentioned, you know, a third of what we throw away could be composted. We are going to be looking here at DEEP to work this year on an organics infrastructure initiative, partnering together with towns that would be interested in hosting a commercial composting facility or an anaerobic digester, whether it's on a farm or a commercial scale one, looking to work with towns who'd be interested in piloting a residential food scrap collection program. DEEP has authorities and things that we can provide in terms of contracts for anaerobic digesters or helping to improve the efficiency of our permitting processes for this type of infrastructure. When we gather together all of those different actions that I just mentioned, we send a powerful signal to investors and developers that Connecticut is a place that we want this infrastructure. We want it to be accessible for towns all around our state. That's a really important part of the chicken and egg challenge so that we can have the infrastructure available for organics, which is going to provide a lower cost option of a place to send that organic waste. And again, help to save taxpayers money into the future.
With that in mind, are you going to be able to ramp things up before the trash incinerator shuts down and turns into a transfer station? Or is there going to be kind of a bridge period where a lot of the state's trash is going to have to be shipped out of state?
You know, we're here at DEEP looking forward to engaging in more conversations with the MIRA leadership team to understand better their plans and their goals. I'm optimistic for the future of MIRA that many of these programs and initiatives that we've been discussing through the Connecticut Coalition for Sustainable Materials Management might be things that can help support the efforts of the MIRA board and provide services that the MIRA participating towns are interested in. But ultimately, we're going to be looking to support the board and work with them on their plans for the future of MIRA.
Now, Laura and Matt, one of the recommendations is creating and promoting recycling at public spaces and municipal buildings. And you go to certain stores and you're able to recycle your light bulbs and other items in some cases. Is that what could take shape at town and city halls?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm working on an initiative with our school district right now. They have had capture programs to grab recyclable items in the schools for quite some time, but we're working on a plan now to separate the food. We want to get ready to do food composting or anaerobic digesting. We're one of the towns that would like to explore that if we can find a way to fund it. And we're going to get the kids to source separate things to make it easier and make recycling easier and make those things more valuable on the other end. And there's tremendous opportunities. Those are sometimes difficult things to do in a big institutional setting, but it can really yield some results. I'm also a very, very big fan of unit-based pricing. We instituted that in Bethel about 8 years ago, and it has been tremendously successful. And again, we're just a residential drop-off, but boy, it works.
Going back to the idea of unit-based pricing, in most cases, is it that someone buys a bag with a municipal sticker or seal or something, and that's how you meter it?
That's one of the ways that you can structure the program. Some municipalities have actually utilized different size carts. So you can pay for a larger trash cart. That's another way to kind of reflect back the cost of the volume of disposal back to the resident or the person generating that trash. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. And that's one of the things that we explored through the process. And it's really important for municipalities as they consider these programs. You know, there's different trade-offs with one over the other. But convenience is a really important factor. And it's important for residents to be part of those discussions.
Can people make a difference at a micro level if they're thinking about throwing away food scraps, if they were to start a compost pile in their backyard? Could that help move the needle if enough people do that?
Absolutely. And that is why one of our suggestions is for municipalities to either subsidize and or promote the sale of those residential at-home composting equipment. And some towns have done that very, very successfully and actually has sparked people to do more gardening and different types of those projects because the product that is generated from that home compost is what they call gold.
Another great example, Erin, of something people can do is learn more about what can go in your recycling bin and what can't. I don't know if folks are familiar with the term wish cycling, but I have personally been guilty of this where, you know, you really want to recycle. And sometimes that means we put more things in the recycling bin than are actually recyclable. So taking a moment to go, we have a great tool on the DEEP website. If you Google what's in, what's out, you can even do this as a quiz with your spouse or partner to check your knowledge about what goes into the recycle bin.
She is DEEP Commissioner Katie Dykes, joined by Durham First Selectman Laura Francis and Bethel First Selectman Matt Knickerbocker. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Erin. Appreciate you having us on.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Erin Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.